This is the starting five, and we are very happy to have on a day off for him, Jack Armstrong, one of our favorite guests here in the starting five. In fact, he is our favorite guest, let's not lie. Welcome, Jack. Thanks for taking your day off and spending a little time with us.
James, my pleasure, anytime.
Now, of course, the NBA Finals ended up last night. We were just talking before we started this interview, Ron Artest wins his first title. For me, I was more taken away by Ron Artest winning his first title than Kobe winning his fifth.
Well, you know, you're right, and I had the opportunity to coach against Ron Artest when he played at St. John's. Actually, the team I coached, Niagara, we upset them in the Holiday Festival at Madison Square Garden, and you know, he was on a team with four NBA players. It was himself and Felipe Lopez and Zenden Hamilton, LeVar Postel, and they were a very good team, and we just got lucky that night. And but you know, and I knew Ron when he played LaSalle Academy in New York City, and he's had his issues, but he's actually a good guy. And I thought the post-game interview with Doris Burke on television was hysterical, and also very revealing to the type of guy that Ron is. And it was, I just found it to be very funny. And very revealing, and showing that you know, as goofy as he can be sometimes, he's genuine, he's authentic. What you see is actually what you get.
Yeah, and even when he came back for the media scrum too, he introduced his whole family to the press, and he was joking around. He was calling out to the people typing on their laptops, and he wouldn't continue until someone waved back at him. I mean, he's just, he's a lot of fun, and he's a guy who I think now he can put behind him that incident that happened in Detroit.
Oh, no doubt. And I think it's a great moment, too, that, you know, David Stern suspended him, rightly so, and, you know, yet I think he learned from the experience, and I think it just goes to show that people can change given the opportunity and also given guidance and given discipline and given parameters. So, I think it was a nice moment, and again, he's a good guy. Now, is he temperamental? Can he be a little crazy sometimes? Definitely. And at the same time, though, it's a good thing to see a guy that plays the game hard and plays the game tough. I mean, Phil Jackson didn't want to take him out of the game. You could see that at moments during the game. He went. Ron Artest finally asked to come out for a little bit. He was out for literally less than a minute, and bang, he was right back in. So I think that speaks volumes for a guy who's got 10 rings going into that game 7 as a coach and two others as a player in Phil Jackson. As much as everyone gets crazy, and I agree with his shot selection sometimes, Ron Artest, and some of the decisions that he makes, you want your best competitors on the floor. You could clearly see that Phil Jackson respects his competitive spirit and his toughness and his willingness to do whatever it takes in a big game, particularly the style of play that game was last night.
And you mentioned about change. There's probably a lot of it coming to Toronto from everything that everyone seems to expect. Part of that change is the draft itself. With the state of this roster, how difficult is it for the Raptors to prepare for this draft?
Quite difficult, yet easy. And I think it, what it does is it sticks you to the mantra that, hey, you just take the best available player on the board and you try to acquire good young players and you go from there. And you don't overthink. Just keep it simple and try to, whoever's on the board, that might be a position that you have a glut of players. Okay, fine. Then you could you can definitely move guys after that fact. I think what it does, James, is it really gets you to a point where you just concentrate on, all right, how do we have our board rated, and we go with that accordingly. And I think that's the better way to go. Don't worry about need. Worry about acquiring. The Raptors are not going to win an NBA championship next year. I have a hard time saying that, but the reality is it's not going to happen. Will they get to the Eastern Conference Finals? It's going to be a long shot at this stage of the game based upon the roster that I see returning. But that doesn't mean that this isn't a great opportunity amidst some challenging times to begin the process of getting this thing right. And how do you do that? I think you stick to your discipline and you stick to your plan on draft night. And whatever's on the board based upon where you are slotted. I know they have the 13th pick. Who's to say they don't try to get involved that much more in the draft? And I think you just stick to your discipline and who you have rated accordingly.
And that led into my next question. There seems to be three different theories about the draft. Some people say trade right out of it and get out of it. Other people say the Raptors are going to acquire more picks. And some people seem to think they're going to try and move up or move down. Which of those scenarios probably plays out?
I would definitely stay in this draft, number one. And if I were the Raptors, based upon cap challenges that they have and might have, based upon what happens with Hedo Turkoglu and what happens with Chris Bosh, they're staring. You know, they're not a team $20 million under the cap. You need cheap labor. You need cheap talented labor. How do you get that? I think you get that based upon getting maybe a few picks and maybe even signing guys on the free agents on the minimum salary and even a second round pick, where you kind of control the economics of it that much more. So I would say with this draft, last year we were all saying how poor a draft it was and how wrong we all were, because it ended up being actually a pretty good draft, and this draft's supposed to be better than that. So who's to say that it's not a bad position to be in right now to try to be aggressive and maybe take on more picks?
And then when we start looking at individuals in this draft, I guess we can start with Kentucky, because five of the guys that are supposed to be picked in the first round, if you believe most of the mock drafts, are Kentucky Wildcats. Now, I think most people know about John Wall and DeMarcus Cousins, and I don't think the Raptors are getting them. What about the other three guys from Kentucky?
Well, you know, you're right. I mean, there's a lot going on when you think about Kentucky, and obviously John Wall is a fabulous player, and DeMarcus Cousins. But then when you go beyond that and look at some of the other Kentucky players, a guy like Patrick Patterson is a polished guy who's a real good player who could help quite a bit. I don't know if he'll be a starter right away, but he'll block shots and rebound for you. Daniel Orton is a guy that he's got significant potential. And a guy like Eric Bledsoe, could round into a very nice professional point guard down the line. You're just trying to figure out where he exactly fits within your program. But needless to say, when you think of salary cap pressures for an NBA team, what kind of salary cap pressures did John Calipari have in Kentucky with those guys?
And I want to briefly touch.
That's a joke, by the way.
I understand, but I actually wanted to briefly touch on that about John Calipari. He seems to, more than any NCAA coach, seems to be at peace with the fact that he's going to have guys, and they're going to come, and they're going to just roll through and come to the NBA, and he seems to be okay with that.
Yes, and that's a guy who's secure within himself, and I think that's important. You know, when you know you have some security, you're willing to take chances, and I think that's an important part of it, that he's able to do that, and I think that's an important thing. He'll roll the dice a little bit on guys. And he's also very good at coaching those guys that are maybe a little more oriented towards the one-and-done scenario. So I think that's important to have the personality. And I think the fact that, you know, things didn't go great for John Calipari with the Nets, but that mentality of coaching in the pros and it being so short-term and guys coming and going left and right, and you just adapt year by year, I think that might have helped him a little bit in terms of his approach, because when he was at UMass before he got to the NBA, it was more guys that were program guys that came in and were with him for a few years.
How big a factor is that for scouts and for teams when they look at a program and who's coaching the program and what they do with that program? The fact that they've had successful guys, does that help other guys as it goes along in the NBA sense of things?
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. There's no doubt in my mind that players have an idea of what the story is, and their AAU coaches and their high school coaches say, "Hey, you know what? This might be a place that you want to go to." You know, so I think there's no doubt in my mind that he knows that gives him a recruiting edge, and there's no doubt, you know, that you know, that you know, he has a great feel for the fact that that's going to help him not only with the kid that he has, but more importantly, securing more. So I think it's smart on his part, and I think the word is out that he's going to definitely be somebody that you want to play for.
But for the other side of it, for NBA teams, is that a big deal, like what systems these guys are coming from and the successful track record of the guys a guy like John Calipari would put into the NBA?
Yeah, definitely. I think he's proven that he's done a good job developing professional talent. That helps a great deal. That rep gets out there. And the fact that he has coached in the pros, that he was an assistant for Larry Brown as well at Kansas. So that's a great connection that he uses. And John has the gift of the gab. So he's able to get the word out there that he's wired in and connected. And quite frankly, he is.
Yeah, you can see him on the Best Damn Sports Show a lot. But we want to switch gears from Kentucky and want to go to Texas. One of the guys at Texas that seems to be the one guy that no one seems to have a real good handle on where he's going to go, Avery Bradley. What do you think of him?
Well, you know, when you look at him, it's a hard discussion right now because he's you know, people looking at him that he could be a true point guard. And he's a wonderful talent. I see him right now probably a middle first-round guy. And he's intriguing. You know, I think what people are willing to take chances more and more because I think they've seen at 6'4 what Russell Westbrook has become and how valuable point guards are, how valuable guys are that can get to the rim. And I think Avery Bradley is one of those guys that I think intrigues people that, you know, that he can play the lead guard position. I like his game. I think he's more of a combo right now. But I tell you what, again, based upon the way the game's being officiated and played, guys like that you have to keep an eye on and keep them on your board, that's for sure.
And what about his teammate, Damian James? What do you think of him? A guy who was depended on to do a lot of things for Texas on that team, a lot more than Bradley, actually.
You know, he's a bit of a tweener, but I love the nose for the ball that he has. He's got explosive athleticism. And I just, the question's going to be, what is he? Is he a three? Is he a four? Can he guard fours in the league? Or is he going to be an undersized four, having a difficult time? Can he get his game off offensively as a three? But I think he's a guy that could be a good second unit player for a team. And again, he's going to be a guy probably middle, late first round, that when you're looking for a value player that could be a good ninth man for you at reasonable money, and a guy who's going to come in hungry, who's got good skills and good raw potential, might be worth a look.
And he's a guy who just hustles and does all the little things.
Totally. I mean, I love that. And I love the fact that he's hungry and he's determined. And he's a guy that, you know, keeps balls alive. That's why I bring up the point, you know, you guys like that, you know, like people wondered what kind of player, I use a Raptor example, what kind of player Jerome Williams, the junkyard dog, was coming out of Georgetown, you know? Well, Jerome Williams made a lot of money. Jerome Williams had a pretty good career in the NBA. Why? He was undersized. I don't know what position he ever was. I mean, he was kind of a 6'6", 6'7", like 3'4", man. But he just found a way to get on the court because he played harder than people.
Yeah, and playing hard is a skill. Someone said that once.
Bill Russell, hustle is a talent because not everyone does it.
Exactly. And another guy I want to touch on, the transfer from Michigan to Baylor, Udo. He did a lot of good things when he went to Baylor after being at Michigan, where he didn't do badly for himself when he was there either.
Yeah, you know, and he's a guy, his stock has risen. Obviously, he blocks shots. He's got potential to be a forceful guy inside. You know, Baylor had a remarkable season this year, and he was a big reason why. He's going to change shots. He's going to block shots. He's going to offense, defensive rebound. He's going to defend in the post. He's going to be that lurking figure in the background that you got to be always accountable for. So the question is, are you willing to absorb some of the time and on the court with him and be patient with him, because his offensive skills are still a good ways behind what he needs to do from a standpoint of being a guy offensively. But I think he's going to be able to play in the league defensively, and then in time you hope his work ethic and his coachability and all that is going to be good enough to put him in a position where he's going to be very effective.
And reading the tea leaves on the wall, based on a lot of the guys that the Raptors have brought in, it certainly seems like they're leaning towards a defensive player, whoever they pick.
Well, I think, you know, and I've said this many times before, I wouldn't say defensive player. I've said it a lot. You got to get two-way players, period. You got to have two-way players, and it's so important to have guys that will, you know, just be respectful, accountable, concerned, passionate about playing the game the right way, hard on both sides of the ball. I think if you look at the teams that played in the NBA Finals, I think they have an inordinate amount of players that play the game that way. So that's what you're looking at. You can't tell me that Kevin Garnett doesn't have offensive skill. He does. I mean, he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. But he plays the game hard on the other side of the ball as well. You can't tell me Kobe Bryant doesn't have offensive skill, but he plays the game hard defensively. So that's what you're looking for. You're looking for a guy with as much offensive ability as you can possibly have that can have it reflect in a team environment, yet at the same time a guy that's going to play hard on every possession, whether it be offense, defense, loose balls, whatever the case may be. The guy's going to compete hard all the time. And when you watch the better teams, they have guys that do that consistently.
Maybe the better way to put it is guys that are ahead defensively as opposed to offensively.
Well, you know, but the only problem with that is, the concern is, you still got to get talent. I mean, you might draft a guy with great defensive ability with a limited ceiling offensively. You know, now the question is, where are you drafting him, and how much is that going to cost? Is that a situation when you have a team that didn't make the playoffs? Is that a luxury or a necessity? And I think for the Raptors, it's probably a little bit of both. So you have to, you know, it all has to be a balancing act. If you take that guy, it's because he's rated at that spot on your board, and you're going to be acquiring other types of players via trade, otherwise in the draft, free agency, whatever the case may be. It's that big old jigsaw puzzle you got to put together. So, I think you stick to your beliefs that, you know, you rate people on your board based upon what you're looking for, the attributes, and I think that will help you get through it and get the guys that you think are going to fit.
And then just wanted to touch on a couple things briefly before we let you go. Since we last talked to you, the Raptors actually have a new assistant coach, PJ Carlissimo, coached in the Big East for a number of years. I'm sure a guy that pretty much everyone seems to be familiar with, including you, I would imagine.
No, I've known PJ for over 25 years. So, PJ's a good friend. He's a Fordham guy like myself. I actually coached his brother in college. I've known his, you know, not only him, but his whole family for many years. In a business that's become too technical and too caught up in X's and O's, I think PJ is a welcome addition to the Raptor staff, because I think he's a guy that has great people skills, not only with the players on the court, but off the court, and as well as within the organization with the other coaches and with the support staff and people. He just has charisma. He has that way about him that unifies people. He had that incident with Latrell Sprewell, no doubt about it. But, I've had my share of battles with players, and I think most coaches have, because you're trying to bring about change in behavior. And sometimes that leads to confrontation. But when you look at PJ Carlissimo over the long haul as a college coach and as a pro coach, he's got an outstanding reputation. He's done an outstanding job. He's got some rings working as an assistant for Greg Popovich. And probably at this stage of his career, he's wonderfully suited to be an assistant in the role that he's going to be in for Jay. So when he got hired, I was very, very excited.
Yeah, it seemed everyone was really happy and excited about this. And a guy who even worked with Matt Devlin on the television. So, you know, he pretty much almost is already in the know with everybody here.
No, there's no doubt about it. I think he has, again, he has great people skills. The fact that so many people know him and like him and we're excited to see him come. He's not coming in making a guy like Jay Triano uncomfortable or one of the other assistant coaches uncomfortable. He's going to come in. He's going to know his place. He's going to be fun. People are going to like him. And it's like anything else in life. You win people over one at a time, and you win people over by your actions on a day-to-day basis. And knowing PJ as long as I've known him, I think his actions and his responses to different situations will win him more friends than the latter.
And then lastly, Brian Colangelo obviously has a challenging summer ahead of him. How does he come out of this on the other side with a team that can be a playoff team and be better than last year's team? Is that even possible?
Wow. I'd like to see him come out of the other side of this with an organization that's poised and directed towards being successful over the next few years, rather than worrying as much about the 2010-2011 season. I think that if there's too much pressure put on that, I think mistakes will be made, and you'll try to get a playoff bid because contracts are expiring from a front office and coaching perspective. And you'll do something that maybe gets you a few more wins in the short term, but doesn't translate into an organization that's poised to go to the Eastern Conference Finals or the NBA Finals or theoretically win it. And I think that's the thing I'm looking for is to come through on the other side and position yourself to have an improved ball club next year. You might not be as talented. You might not have as many wins. So how do you say, how can that be improved? Well, the team could just exhibit within the skill set that they have better attributes than they exhibited this year. And you could look and say, you know what? All right, maybe they won 38 games, but now they're on their way. Look, they got some good young pieces in place. And we saw this happen in Oklahoma City. And look where they've gone in a tougher conference. So I think that, you know, we see the Toronto Maple Leafs make a trade for Phil Kessel, and you look at the Boston Bruins now drafting second with that pick. You know, you just hope for Brian Burke and you hope for Phil Kessel that when they get through it, that he's that much better than anything they would have ever gotten in the draft. So what you're thinking, is it short-term, long-term? From a college perspective, as a former college coach, are you the type of guy that's going to recruit more junior college players and go for the instant gratification? Or are you willing and able to endure a little bit of pain short-term for long-term gain?
And then if we end up next season without Bosch and without Hidu, who is this an opportunity for? Is this an opportunity for DeMar DeRozan, for Sonny Weems, for an Andrea Bargnani? Because this will be a team that I think really won't have that guy that you can put on the poster anymore and flash out there and say, this is the franchise player.
That's good. I don't know why we need to put out posters. I don't know why we need to do that. I think people want a winning team. As much as people that are in marketing and promotions think that you got to have the star to sell, I think you look at the Detroit Pistons of the previous decade, and they lost Grant Hill to Orlando, and they got Chauncey Billups and Ben Wallace, but they put together good pieces. They hit a lot of singles. They hit a bunch of doubles. They had good on-base percentage, and they won. They didn't win with the home run on a consistent basis. They just beat you because they were good. There were no holes. And I think that's, in my mind, the vision that I'd like to see as we go forward here now. Everyone was all excited and wowed by Hedo Turkoglu's signing. But at the end of the day, after a year, there's a possibility he might not be back. Was it all worth that money? Or are you better off maybe getting a single or a double and just putting together a good team? And I think that's the challenge that Brian Colangelo and his staff are facing right now, is wrestling with that and making sure that they stay true to whatever their philosophical belief is right now, because your philosophical belief and your actions are ultimately going to define you, and you hope they define you in a positive.
And is that part, too, that Toronto gets into this whole thing of, there are certain guys that, being realistic, I don't think anyone would expect to ever come here. And there, you can't have, Kobe Bryant is never going to be a Toronto Raptor. LeBron James is probably never going to be a Toronto Raptor. Maybe the way you're talking about is the way you can build and be successful and get it done eventually.
Well, and I make this point all the time, and you've heard me say, how can Marquette and the Big East be successful every year? I mean, you tell me, Milwaukee's not a sexy metropolis, but they found a way. If you look at their record over the last 20 years, they're pretty good. They're not great, but they're pretty good. And how can Utah, the Jazz, be one of the best organizations, not only in the NBA, but in pro sports? And how can Oklahoma City be a hot young team right now? I mean, Oklahoma City, they're the two smallest markets in the NBA. If they can figure it out, why can't Toronto? So I don't want to hear the excuse about people who don't want to come play in Toronto. That's garbage. That's nonsense. If Oklahoma City and Utah can have winning teams, and if you can win in big conferences in college basketball in difficult places to recruit to, then I think that's just all, excuses that fans make or whoever wants to make. The bottom line is Toronto's one of the great cities in the NBA. I would call it a top 10, top 5 market. And I think if you ask the vast, vast, vast majority of players, they have Toronto marked very, very, very high on their list in terms of places that they enjoy coming to. And the guys who've played here feel the same way. So it's about making the right decisions, bringing the right players in, coaching them up, and having success.
Indeed, and it's always fun talking with you, Jack, and it's going to be a long off season with a lot of changes, so we may bug you during the summertime, if that's all right with you.
James, my pleasure. Have a great summer.
You too, Jack.